You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you who are joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And I think you've made a very good decision to be here. We've got a great guest this evening. Be sure, if you're brand new and don't know about this, be sure that you get over to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, all right? Now, I know, see, a lot of you are already on the website. You're already there, and that's how you are listening to the show. And some of you are watching the show on our player. That's a good thing. Some folks are listening by other means and don't know it. So go to kevinsmithshow.com. And when you get there, you will see a little ad that says K-Files e-zine. And what you want to do is click on that and subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. It's an absolutely free newsletter. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. There are no strings attached. And we don't share the email list with anybody, okay? So we don't loan it out, rent it out, lease it out, nothing like that. So you're not going to get spammed as a result of subscribing to the Kevin Smith Show's newsletter. And again, it's called the K-Files e-zine. Now, as a result of some really crazy email that I was getting during the show last night and have gotten since, by a person who, in my opinion, obviously needs psychiatric treatment. I put a poll up, and some 94 people so far, I didn't announce it, I just put it up there, 94 people have so far answered the question. And the question is, I think Kevin should shelter us from controversial guests and only present mundane guests with which everyone can agree. And then, of course, the choices are I agree, I disagree, or I don't have enough cojones to have an opinion. Now, this is interesting because of the responses. 90.4% disagree with that. And you know that I present edge information. Doesn't mean I promote it. It means I present it. We ask questions about it. And what gets me is I get email from people then after the show that says, well, you should have asked this, and you should have asked this. No, you should have asked. Why didn't you call and ask? Anyway, 90.4% disagree. They don't think I should shelter you from anything that's going to rock your boat. 5.3% think I should shelter you. I have to, you know, if you expect me to do your thinking for you, believe me, my dear friend, you are wasting expects. It's just an indication that you have become addicted to mainstream media. I love you. I'm glad you're here, but you're wasting expects. I'm not going to do your thinking for you. nor am I going to protect you from things that may rock your boat. 4.2%. 4.2% said, I don't have enough cojones to have an opinion. We'll be back with Dr. Jason Rand and some more controversial rock your boat kind of information right after this.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artist from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel AllStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website, or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. And we are back. My guest this evening is Dr. Jason Rand. Dr. Jason Rand is, he has an honorary PhD in the field of energy informative sciences from the Academy of Energy Informative Sciences, conducted with Moscow University. In addition to that, he's a big shot music producer, songwriter, recording artist,
And as a matter of fact, has 35 gold and platinum records. He is a noted researcher in the field of extraterrestrial communications and UFO phenomena. Dr. Rand, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure tonight.
Before we get into this really heady and deep subject that you've written about in your latest book, Planet X, actually it's called The Return of Planet X, I just got to ask, how does someone who is a big shot music producer with all these gold and platinum records get off into the study of extraterrestrial communications and UFO phenomena? How did that happen?
Well, it all happened one night when I was 11 years old up in Canada. We were on a fly-in fishing trip. My dad would take us on some kind of a fishing expedition every year, and this year, to our surprise, it was to Canada, and we flew in this beautiful big beaver. Anyway,
You flew in a beautiful big what?
Beaver aircraft. They're a rugged pontoon-based aircraft for landing on water.
Okay.
Like a big seaplane.
Yeah.
Okay. So we flew into this remote island setting 225 miles northeast of Lake Winnipeg. So we're way up in Manitoba. Okay. Took the boat out without my dad's permission, got caught in a very bad storm, was just about dying because the boat was sinking. I was in the middle of nowhere, and then I pass out. The next thing that I remember waking up, I'm in the boat, and I'm safely out of the storm, and I hear this voice talking to me. I'm 11 years old. And interestingly enough, it was the year 1950. Remember there was a movie that came out called The Day the Earth Stood Still?
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do.
You remember the old The Thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, 11 years old, seeing all those movies, you know, where do you think my mind was? I was like, wow. And this, whatever this thing was that came to save me, brought me safely to the shore, communicated with me telepathically, went up on the shore. An hour later, the ship lands. I wind up on this craft at age 11 for about 5.5 hours. And that's where the story begins. Because what they told me as I was leaving the ship, after tutorial and a lot of discussion and a big slideshow that they showed me all about what was going to happen with Planet X in the year 2012. So the last things that they were saying to me was that there would be this killer star. They called it the killer death star. And they also referred to it as Wormwood. Now, if you go to the book of Revelation, the Christian Bible, the last book of the Bible, in chapter 8, verse 11, and I'm quoting, and the name of the star was Wormwood, unquote, from the Bible. The book we're talking about was really born when I was 11 years old because they asked me to take on a mission to do just that, to become a ufologist, and they told me in this order. Now, this answers your question of why in the music to tie in. They told me that when I would grow up, if I would work with them and be a part of a program as a child, that I would become a musician, a writer, and a teacher. And it's come true in that exact order. First came the excitement. By the way, I was on television at a very early age. Do you remember Kukla, Fran, and Ollie out of Chicago?
Sure.
The early Bell.
Sure, everybody remembers Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Yeah, I was one of the regular Kukla, Fran, and Ollie boys.
Oh, wow. So you're a kid TV
back.
Star.
Yeah. But, you know, that wasn't what I was destined to do at that point, okay? But
all right.
I was on television at a very early age is my point. So I've grown up in the medium. And so getting into the music business was a natural. Do you remember the group Styx?
Sure.
Well, we grew up living kitty corner from each other in an area of Chicago, a southern suburb called Roseland. And I used to hang out with them when they were practicing. And I helped them get with Mercury Records, and that's how they got their first gigs. So I go way back in the music industry. So becoming a musician and a producer and a director, I've covered the media. When I was in the Army, I was in charge of the Fifth Army Public Information Office at an age of only 25 and a rank of Spec 4, and in order to have that position, they had to give me an immediate rise in rank with the assignment. You follow me? It called for a Spec 5, and only a Spec 5 and above could do it. So I wound up running radio and television and writing speeches, and I got to know a lot of political people. But that's another whole story, my friend. I've done a lot of things. I'll give you a quick bird's-eye view of how bizarre my life has been. Remember the Democratic riots in 1968?
Oh, yeah.
In Chicago,
yeah.
Convention?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the whole heyday and the trial and the indictments and then the nine that were put up, the Chicago Conspiracy 8? You remember all that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My mother was the matron deputy sheriff in charge of protecting the jury.
Well, I'm glad you have a law enforcement connection there. I'm a former cop, so I'm partial to that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you were. Well, guess what I did for a year and a half?
What was that?
There were two attempts made on my mother's life. Each of them failed. Each time she got one, she nailed one with a bullet wound. She was a dead shot. Because my mother's father... Okay, are you ready for another little departure? We're not going too strange or too fast here, are we?
No, let's do it, man. Rock the boat.
You're tracking with me. I mean, I'm not sounding too far for you too fast.
You cannot sound too far for me.
I'm going to drop a few things on you that are most interesting. For instance,
all right.
My grandfather, my mother's father, was Al Capone's barber and head chef for 22 years. So I grew up with my grandfather being who he was, and I met a lot of those kind of people. So I've had great exposure to a lot of things. And a lot of them are political. And it's a very interesting dichotomy of what I'm doing now in relation to what's happening on the planet. Because in the book that we began talking about called The Return of Planet X, I wrote this book. It took me 7.5 years for the research and the writing. Let's establish that. This was not an easy book to write. First of all, I wasn't really sure I even believed in the idea. And what started it was, in 1982, the New York Times ran a specific series of articles talking about the fact that NASA was about to announce that they had just spotted something called Planet X. And they described it as a spent brown dwarf star. This was in 1982, New York Times. A few hours later, the Pentagon comes out with a counter statement saying that, you know, that press release and that article, you know, and in the meantime, the Washington Post goes with the story in between the fracas with the New York Times. They come out with a full discussion on it. In fact, they expose NASA's original announcement of it, which was about ready to be, they pushed the issue, you follow me?
Yeah, and now that one I'm familiar with. They quoted the chief scientist on the IRIS project.
You're absolutely correct, sir.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely correct. So my story, the thing you and I are talking about in your audience and we're sharing with them is that this isn't a new story at all. It's at least 25, almost 30 years old. But the point of it is that event started me thinking to the event on the ship. When they showed me what was going to happen in 2009 to 10 to 11 to 2012, when they call the end of cosmic time would take place for the planet. And that's also covered in the book. So we're talking about a lot of things that are metaphysical here. They're not necessarily provable. A lot of things that are metaphysical are just that. They're beyond the physical. That's what metaphysical truly means.
Well, look, as a matter of fact, and I'm glad you brought that up, but I want to go ahead and add this statement.
Sure, please.
Almost everything that's physical is not provable.
Exactly, sir. Exactly.
Do you know who Dr. Michio Kaku is?
Illusion.
Do you know Dr. Michio Kaku, the father of the string theory? He was a guest on this show. And he has a book called The Physics of the Impossible. And that's what we were discussing. Oh, yeah. And I asked him this question. I said, would it be fair to say that the so-called laws of physics are not actually laws? They are simply descriptions of the boundaries of our understanding of how it works. And he said, oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I double that. I mean, you couldn't have said it more perfectly.
And so, you know, virtually everything that people call laws are really just theories that are very, have shown themselves to be reliable, but they're not proof. They're theories. And so that goes for the metaphysical as well.
In terms of the metaphysical and the book, The Return of Planet X, which I would like to take a second to talk about.
Sure.
The whole point of writing this book was predicated upon the fact that I was given that mission at age 11 as I was leaving the ship. Incidentally, I also have what has been identified as a crystal implant chip in the front part of my brain, which is a communicating type device. And it goes along with a big black crystal that I have that was given to me as I left the ship so that I had some tangible proof. Like they always say, well, you never bring any proof back, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, I have this big, beautiful piece of black quartz crystal, which they call the magic stone, because it's from the Black Crystal Mountain on their planet. Now, I'm beginning to sound like Brad Pitt. You remember in that movie that he was so brilliant in?
Yeah, but it's okay.
I'm not going too far here too fast.
No, you won't outrun us.
All right. I'm just going to keep moving, all right?
Yeah, you're doing fine.
So with this black crystal, I always have it with me, no matter where I go. I've even got a smaller piece of it that I take with me when I'm on the road, because it is my communicating device. As long as I'm within a hand's reach or a touch or a breath of that particular crystal stone, my communicating device is turned on and it's ready for a transmission in or out. It's just that simple.
And do you receive transmissions
still? It's like a telephone,
still?
But it's like a cosmic telephone, but it doesn't use any juice or any batteries. It's because the crystal's charged. And once it's charged, it remains charged. And the crystal chip that I have matches it, you see, because it was taken from that stone.
All right, do you receive messages from them still?
Oh, yes. Sometimes discussions. Some of them are OBEs, out-of-bodies. You know what those are.
Sure.
Okay, speaking of OBEs, let's go back to when it really, really, really started. About age 4 to 5... I became acutely aware that someone was talking to me while I was sleeping. I thought that I had somebody talking to me in my dreams. As a child of 3 or 4, everything is imaginary anyway, okay? But actually, it wasn't imaginary. It was real, and there was someone talking to me, and it was a child my age from their side, from the ET side. His name was Elon, capital A-capital L-O-N, Elon. And Elon was my paired mate, my friend, my buddy. What they do is, when they interact, see, I'm considered to be a contactee. Since this early age started, I had been contacted telepathically, and eventually, by the time I got to be 6, 7, 8, 9, I was going out regularly on OBEs, out-of-body experiences, where I was going to a very large classroom, a celestial kind of classroom. It was very, very bright. All the images that I retain they seem to run of these experiences when I was taken to this classroom setting, and I'll tell you more about it, was that everything, when I think about it or try to think about it, it all comes back to me in this beautifully technicolored, slow motion kind of quick frame. In other words, it's slow motion, but it's quick frame. You understand what I mean?
Sure.
Cinematographically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what I see are faces which are hard to identify, but I can always see my friend, Elon, because he was always with me in the classroom setting. In effect, what was happening was we were being taken aboard what we would call a spacecraft. Actually, they're very large, very complicated, very sophisticated ships, sometimes a mile long.
Where are these ships?
they're there and you just don't see them. Sometimes people see them. They go cloaked.
Well, I mean, are they in our atmosphere or are they out in
They can be anywhere in a flash because they don't travel through space or they more tamper with time and they use the term wormholes, of course, is not new, but it's a little different than that. They're energy vortices that are laid out on a grid map that crisscross the cosmos. Okay, let's talk about ley lines real quick. You know about Earth's ley lines?
Absolutely.
The natural electromagnetic shell that she has.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, those ley lines are part of an integral network that interconnects with the core of the planet. So there's a direct feed between the uppermost part of the Earth's sensor system, which goes on down, all the way down to the magma. The Earth itself is a very, very dangerous creature because it is a creature of creation. The Earth is constantly recreating herself. All this bad weather that we're having and all these storms, yes, it's all cyclical, and yes, it's all part of normal and unnormal weather patterns, but there's something fueling it. And that was the need to write the book. So I started writing the book, actually, in 2004, after coming across all these articles and starting the research. By the way, I collected about 380 books in the process. I have at least 70 books with the title Planet X in it. So this subject is being written by many authors in many languages. This is something that is just not understood. Kevin, when the media figures out what's going on with this whole Planet X mystique, there are thousands of websites on Planet X. It's all over. There's film, there's video, there's interconnections. The hidden public, what I call the devotees, they're hooked in. You know, there's a new X-Files movie coming, right?
Right.
Well, the buzz here in dry old Memphis is already starting to get excited. So, you know, Joe Public, you and I...
Now, the buzz, by the way, is an independent radio station there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, whatever it is, we're getting hype here already in the Memphis area. So, obviously, I can't wait to see the X-Files, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love that kind of genre. So, anyway, back to our story. So... started writing the book, collect all these books. I had to read every one of these books from stem to stern. And while I did so, I kept taking a serious set of notes. And you'll notice in the book that at the end of each chapter, I reference all of my major assertions, all of my major critiques, and all of the exact words presented for public understanding and my understanding of the situation. And I came up with the fact that we are in very serious, precarious times. And I knew this back in 04 and 05. Do you remember that terrible, terrible spate of storms we had, hurricanes in 2005? It was just devastating.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this was all part of the information that was being given to me and is still being given to me. And I have what I believe is a forecast that I would love to share with your audience. I'm very fearful of this coming hurricane season.
Well, I'll tell you what, before we get into the forecast, we have a break coming in about 1 minute, and I don't want us to interrupt that forecast, but let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Just in a minute or less, what is Planet X for those who do not know and are not familiar with that?
30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Planet X is a rogue brown dwarf star kicked out into a large elliptical orbit. We believe Planet X was a small sister sun to our sun, got involved in a big collision 4.5 billion years ago, kicked out in space, comes back every 36 to 4,000 years with regular deathly reaction every time it comes through the planetary solar system, whether it comes above or below it or just around it. Even if it just passes, glances through the area of the solar system, it could cause huge, terrible disruptions.
All right, we are into the break, and we shall return. More with Dr. Jason Rand right after this.
never imagine who I am today. I've got a secret, but it don't come for free. The price of excitement is your desire to be somebody. Your desire to please. All I am is you. Just like the rest of us, all I am is you. All I am is you. Take a look, baby, I'm just your type. Read between the lines, I'm like a black light. I've got a secret, but it don't come for free. The price of excitement is your desire to be just like me. I've got what you need. All I am is you. All I am is you. Just like the rest of us. All I am is you.
We are back with Dr. Jason Rand. All right, you said that you were going to present some information to us, that I interrupted you and said I don't want you to break that up. So,
right. We were talking about my worry over this coming hurricane season, which I believe is just about to start. I have a feeling in the next week or two we're going to have our first hurricane. Now, here's my concern about the big picture for this forthcoming season, which I believe will start shortly. We have to look back to last year's pattern to get a hint of how we think this thing's going to track this year, because hurricanes never follow the exact same path every year. They always have a change of course. It's very rare. Now, in 2005, that was broken. For the first 3 to 4 to 5 hurricanes that struck, they all rammed right across the very tip of South America, hitting Central America and then smashing into Mexico. If you go back the first 4 or 5 tracked right into Mexico, and then the 6th one tracked more eastward, approaching Texas, and then the 7th, and then the 8th. By the time the 9th one came, it was already headed up into Louisiana, but it lost its steam. Now, I've been watching the way the hurricane patterns over the last 4 or 5 years, and if I'm right about this, I hope I'm not. Let me say that. I hope I'm not, but if I am, we need to start getting ready now. I think that as this new season comes, we're going to find that the track of the hurricanes coming out of the East Atlantic off of Africa are going to take northwesterly turn, and they're going to turn like in a northwest perspective, and they're going to sweep upward, and I'm afraid that they're going to track into Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, and Florida. I think that this season. We have to be particularly careful on the Gulf Coast.
All right, now let me ask you.
I'm really worried about New Orleans.
But let me ask you to sort of elucidate on this point. What connection is there between the hurricanes and Planet X?
That's a very good question, and actually it's very easy. It's not complicated at all. Okay. First of all, we have to jump back to about 1992, because things started to go really wacky in 1992. Why that particular year is another discussion. The cyclical natural disaster events started happening in 1992, and I don't want to spend moments. All we have to do is look back and track them. You'll see that 1992, 93, 94, it started escalating, and it's been continually escalating year by year. More hurricanes, more storms, more wildfires, more tornadoes. Do you realize, Kevin, that this year, when we transitioned from 207's tornado season, you know, through the winter, you know, it usually calms down during the winter. You know, we usually have our tornadoes in the spring and summer, and then they usually peter out in the fall. September, they're gone. But they didn't this year. The tornadoes continued unabated and relentlessly all the way through December, January, February, March, and April, and continues even to this moment. So we have not had a cessation of tornadoes in the last almost 18 months.
Well, and we were having tornadoes in places that do not usually have tornadoes.
Absolutely. Now, to specifically say, you know, what is your concern about the hurricanes? How is it affected by Planet X? Very simply this. Our weather is being affected because our planet is being affected. As quickly as I can say it and as simply as I can, our planet has an inner core, and that inner core spins. And we believe, our research indicates, that the core has been spinning faster and is actually accelerating. And as it does, it creates more heat on the inner core because of the dynamics, you know, let's not go into Einstein's theory, okay? The point of the matter is, as the core heats, so does the planet, and so does the volcanic activity of the planet, because if the magma gets excited, it's held in things called magma chambers, okay? And these magma chambers usually sit below the world's huge volcanic mounts, like Mauna Loa. Do you know that Mauna Loa is almost 39,000 to almost 41,000 feet as the highest mountain on Earth? It eclipses Mount Everest, of course, but three-quarters of that is below the water. Can you imagine the base on that sucker? I understand it's about 300-mile base, the cone. I mean, the base of the cone.
Well, okay. Now, so as Planet X is approaching, it is having this effect on the Earth's core.
It's having its effect on all of Earth's systems. And I believe that the oceans are warming partly because of global warming. But you see, this particular type of global warming is not understood. We're labeling it wrong. They're looking to the atmosphere as the problem, causing the problem with the CO2 and the collapsing of the various layers of the atmosphere. But they failed to realize that all of the undersea volcanoes of the world, and by the way, there are five times as many undersea volcanoes as there are volcanoes that break the surface. Try that one on for size. I believe that a large portion of these, I believe that their magma chambers are beginning to fill with magma. And as this magma comes closer to the surface, in this case, to the floor of the ocean, which is the direct, sits over the magma chambers, which feeds those volcanoes that thrust up from the ocean, okay? Now, there are many of these which are called pygmy volcanoes. They're still huge. There could be 30 of them in a cluster up and down a ridge, you see. If all these started to come to fill with magma, then all that heating is heating up the Pacific and the Atlantic. And I believe that the world's oceans have been steadily warming now for about 12 years, very quietly. And that kind of goes back to 92, 93, when all this weather stuff. Now, How is it affecting the hurricanes? As the water's warm, it changes the weather patterns of the Earth. All ocean currents are dependent upon a very delicate balance of the planet's rotation and its proximity to the sun, and all of these things create the dynamics that create the ocean's currents, okay? So when these currents get disturbed, it disturbs the weather patterns. And in this particular case, we're talking about what affects the Gulf Stream, affects not only Europe, but starting with the northeast part of our country. As you know, the Gulf Stream sweeps up in a large northeast kind of thing, comes on down to the Pacific, and it starts meeting all the islands, and then it creates what's known as the Ring of Fire. There are thousands of undersea as well as above sea mountains that are comprising what's known as the Ring of Fire, and some of it, most of it actually crosses almost from one continent to another, and some of it's underwater. If all this should start to happen, we're in big trouble. And I think that's what may be happening and causing the heating of the oceans, which is affecting the hurricanes and the storms. And remember, our weather patterns in North America come from the Arctic Circle, the weather that is created at the top of the world as it comes down on its pattern, traveling eastward, okay? So whatever happens up there, we're affected by it. That's what brings us our weather fronts. That's what brings us our changing weather. Prevailing winds flow from the west to the east. The jet stream flows from the west to the east. It's because of the spin of the planet, you see? It's how the planet generates its weather system. So, bring us up to this moment, and I have to say to you that not only has our weather patterns been disrupted, weather patterns all over the planet have been disrupted. We're not the only ones. There's volcanoes going off. There are earthquakes taking place. There are typhoons taking place. We just lost around what 100,000 to 200,000 people in a terrible cyclone that hit in the east.
Yeah, so, it hit Myanmar, or we used to call it Burma.
Yes, in Myanmar, Burma. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, direct answer to your question is yes. Of course, it has everything to do with it. And by the way, what affects the Earth happens to us because something is affecting our sun. Keep in mind that our sun is our sole source of life-giving energy. That's it. No sun, we die quickly. We just freeze. So the point of the matter is that what affects the sun affects all of the other planets in the system, including those that may be errant brown dwarf stars on weird elliptical courses that take anywhere from 36 to 4,000 years. Why? Because celestial mechanics is not well enough understood by us at this point to figure this one out.
At the beginning of the discussion, you mentioned that you were identifying Planet X with Wormwood, which is mentioned in the book of Revelation, which is the last book of the Christian Bible. In Revelation, where it talks about Wormwood, it calls it a star, and it says that it collides with the Earth.
Well, no, it doesn't say it collides with the Earth.
It actually does. It goes right on into the ocean and kills 2/3 of the life in the ocean.
Well, it's a piece of it that does that.
Okay.
The main body itself of this errant, burned out, we believe, brown dwarf star, the main part of it does not. But it seems that as it does come to pass, it sends out bits and pieces. You see,
okay, we'll get the rest of that when we come back. A break is on us and our mics are about to go dead. All right, folks, we'll be back more with Dr. Jason Rand, The Return of Planet X.
Thank you.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com. All right, we are back. My guest this evening is Dr. Jason Rand.
Now, when we went away for break, you were about to explain, you know, the part of Wormwood or Planet X strikes the Earth, but something else happens.
Right. A celestial object such as this, which has a huge electromagnetic and sometimes a dimensional shifting power base, pushes and captures, it pushes a debris field ahead of it, and it also captures a debris field that it pulls behind it, okay?
Yeah.
So it's a pushing, pulling type of celestial body, and we believe that very often, as described in the Bible, a large piece of this debris field, which is part of this brown dwarf star, sometimes does hit the Earth. We've known that there have been several major impacts on this planet. You know, the 65-million-year one, you know, Gulf of Mexico killing all the dinosaurs, that type of thing. So the point is that our research clearly demonstrated, and by the way, each chapter has its own references, so there's over 2,000 references, page numbers, IBIDs, and all that stuff. Okay, the point being that there is such vivid proof in looking back at the old records and old testimonies, going back, sometimes I went back as far as 100,000 years of a book that did research on how these disasters were in the past. And it all washed out that about every 3,600 to 4,000 years, there was a major shift in the planet's climate system, as well as a shift in its animal worlds and its insect worlds and its quasi-humanoid worlds in the last 50,000-60,000 years.
And through it all, the humble cockroach has survived.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they're we could learn from them, believe me. Let's not make too badly of these little guys. There's a lot that they do, by the way, that's very smart. We should learn how they survive. Wouldn't that be an interesting study?
It would, and we may have to if we are to survive.
Exactly. So I guess what we should do, though, is stay back on your questions. By the way, I like responding to your questions, so feel free to shoot them away.
All right. The arrival of Planet X, it's supposed to be coming back through here every 3,600 to 4,000 years. So when are we supposed to be seeing Planet X?
All right. Well, let me back up to the last time we think our research indicated, and most of this was based on not only biblical information cited word for word, but also on dozens of other books that all conclude that they believe that the last time this particular celestial body, whatever it is, came through was in 1447 BCE, which happens to coincide exactly with the year that archaeologists believe that Moses was leading the Israelites out of Egypt. And if this is true, it would clearly explain all of the strange phenomena that Moses was able to command. The frogs falling out and the rivers turning to blood and the sun standing still and all this kind of things, which were signs, of course, that he was throwing at Pharaoh so that he would release his people. Okay? And it's strange that all of the things covered in the story of Exodus, every one of them are things that are not only easily understood and explained away, but are cited in all of these major disaster accounts. And I've gone back country by country by country for centuries. All right? Deadly accuracy. They all point to the same thing. It's called the Death Star. It's called the Killer Star. It's called Euripides. It's called the Angel of Death and the Coiling Serpent. It's always the same description, only different verbiage. And that occurred because all through time it changed, just like our language is constantly evolving, right? Who knew what a computer was in 1925, right?
Oh, well, the word input and the word output were not used until, the 1980s?
There you go. So when you find out this compelling body of information that suddenly confirms all of the other research, I suddenly had the premise for my book. You see, the book didn't start writing itself until years after the research started. Oh, I had some ideas. You know what I do sometimes, Kevin? This is kind of cute. I'd get this harebrained idea for a chapter, so I'd rush to the computer and flip out my. Back then, I was using floppies on an old Macintosh, a big old SE Macintosh, which I still have, which still works and has never broken down. And end of commercial. So I'd bang out a paragraph or two to start the chapter, and I'd have these in files. And suddenly, I had like 9 file folders with 9 distinct ideas, and it all came very methodical. And I think that part of it was because I was getting feedback from my friend Elon all the time I wrote the book. By the way, this is not the first book we've written. We've written 4 others and many pamphlets. I've done regular serial writing for several UFO magazines and the X Chronicles and all kinds of stuff. But the point of the matter is that the writing part was the second. Remember, they said I'd be a musician, and I'd be a writer, and I'd be a teacher, right? Well, the third part of that, the teaching, is actually now begun. And that's why I am so pleased and so honored and so thankful for you to expand to me and offer me the opportunity to communicate with your audience. Because these are important matters, Kevin.
Well, I think they are. And let me say, this audience is highly interested in anything having to do with Planet X / Nibiru or the year 2012.
We should talk about what Nibiru is and what its relationship to Planet X and what it's not.
Let's do.
You want to do that real quick? Okay. Nibiru and Planet X. Okay, first of all, Wormwood is the actual term of the celestial body that I would like to use, because if I am right about this, and believe me, sometimes I wish I was wrong, but I think not. I think I'm right. If this is the same celestial body, then the name Planet X was actually ascribed to it by none other than NASA itself. Now, I find that interesting, don't you? It was NASA itself in that original news article, which, by the way, is reprinted by the Washington Times article, the New York Times article, and the original Planet X announcement by NASA is all recreated in the book. So, to let the audience know that everything that I presented in that book can either be documented, can be referenced, or I presented it for physical review. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think to write a book like this, you have to be that transparent.
Well, I think so.
Not afford the audience to say, wait a minute, I don't know who this guy is. How do I know what he's talking about? Okay? So I had to carefully edit and check and double check. And incidentally, There are two prominent people that I mentioned, Dr. Hal Puthoff. Do you know Dr. Hal?
Yes.
You do?
Oh, I've exchanged email with him, yes.
Yeah, he helped contribute to my book.
Well, he's a very, very, it's an understatement to say, a very smart man.
We can't tell your audience what he does because they'd kill us.
Okay.
No, that's okay. I've said that. I was only joking, of course.
Well, but let's get back to Nibiru and Planet X and the relationship.
Okay. Nibiru is the famous 12th planet that was written about and so perfectly presented by Zechariah Sitchin. His 12th planet series, and he's written a number of books. By the way, his new book is absolutely brilliant. I'd like to recommend it to you.
Okay.
All right. Now, Nibiru is the planet that he believes were involved with the Nephilim. Now, the Nephilim, strangely enough, are also mentioned in Genesis.
Yes, they are.
The daughters of men, I don't want to go into all that. Not necessary. So now we have another component to this Planet X thing, okay? Now, the only way, I'm going to give you a really, really way out one on Planet X and Nibiru and Wormwood.
You got 30 seconds till break.
Okay, suppose that Wormwood is powerful enough to attract Sitchin's 12th planet, Nibiru. Because if in fact it is in tow behind this fairly large sun, then it would explain why all the passages in the Bible happen about every 3,600 to 4,000 years, that there was interference by this Nephilim-type society. How's that for 30 seconds?
That's excellent.
We'll be back, folks, with Dr. Jason Rand, and in just a little bit, we'll open up the telephone line for your calls. Don't go away.
September, cold about your face. No time forever, to hell with your embrace. You'll go along the way. Show me the beauty hidden by the skin. Cold
And we are back. My guest this evening is Dr. Jason Rand. And
Dr. Rand, we already have callers lining up. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. It's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin.
And hello, Jason.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Please speak up.
You're coming in very faint.
Oh, okay. Kevin, I do want to talk to you. I want to be able to talk to you perhaps later about probably about an affiliate for the Kevin Smith Show.
Sure.
If I talk to you about it maybe later on tonight after the show. And, Jason, you know, I find it kind of strange that NASA chose the name Planet X. Because, if you know, Planet X is an exact translation to the word Nibiru, which means planet of the crossing, and what an X is a crossing.
Yeah, but the fact is the X, when they chose the name, meant Roman numeral 10.
Well, I think it may have had more than one meaning. I think they know what they say, that they sometimes let out little bits of information, you know, to, you know, for disclosure.
Well, yeah, it could be. Could be.
Yeah, it's Planet X. Nibiru means planet of the crossing. I think it's almost evident. Like I noticed that about Nibiru, Planet X.
What about that, Jason?
Well, I think both of you are right, and I do believe, sir, that you have nailed it exactly. Listen. Why would you not assume that the greatest technical, richest country, the most powerful in the world, wouldn't have all of this knowledge already accumulated? You see, we only know a fraction of what's really going on behind closed doors. And I'm talking about advanced power sources. This whole stupid, ridiculous argument about oil-based products is stupid. Mm-hmm. They have other technologies of extraterrestrial origin that could be introduced. It goes a lot deeper than worrying about fossil fuels.
Well,
it all goes to what would happen to the business model of the world should a form of freer energy be introduced. I mean, it's a simple equation.
Well,
okay?
Do you see my point, sir? Do you remember a couple months ago when NASA was going to have this huge press conference about something they've been looking for 50 years?
Yes.
Do you think that was Nibiru or Planet X that they actually spotted?
I think they wanted to discuss it in terms of what they believe is Planet X. Keep in mind that they themselves, like you brought out,
mm-hmm.
the fact that Planet X and Nibiru are intertranslatable and have the meanings that connect. The point being is that they've been in charge of this whole process ever since they made the announcement, and then they simply went underground. This whole huge multi-billion dollar telescope array just recently built down at the South Pole was obviously built for a specific reason, and that was simply that they can track this incoming object because that's the way it's coming into the solar system. It's coming in from behind the sun. We haven't been able to see it or detect it, partly because of the glare of the sun, but more importantly, because its properties of light transference and light absorption are limited because of the type of celestial body that it is. It's a smoldering mass. It's a spent brown dwarf star. It could have some form of luminosity, but we believe it's more that it's heat and its powerful gravitational forces that it creates.
Well,
so if we're right about this, there's much confusion, which works to NASA's best interest if everyone's confused about what it is we're all talking about. That was another reason why I wrote the book the way I did. I wrote it as a tutorial. I talk about NASA. I talk about what the government knows and what they don't know. We've got a whole chapter that is devoted to the U.S. government and what it's doing, what it's not doing, what it knows, what it doesn't know about metaphysics and universal power and all this stuff. We covered it in the book. Mind you, we wrote this 3.5 to 4 years ago, mm-hmm. foreseeing what was coming. We talk about this very fuel thing right now.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call, Kevin. The telephone number to call is 1-623-581-5148. There it is on the screen for you now. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Chris again, Kevin. I called you last night about the Mars thing.
All right.
Hey, this is really interesting to me because I need to have someone, especially your guest, explain to me, and I've noticed this more now, and I hope some of the other listeners have also noticed this.
Kevin, he's breaking up. I can hardly hear him.
Yeah, we are having a difficult time hearing you, Chris. You'll have to speak up.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay, my concern is if your guests notice it also, I've noticed where the sun is rising much further northeast and setting northwest more now, and the light is coming into my house totally different than what it's done the last 10 years that I've lived here. And I'm wondering if that has something to do with the appearance or reappearance of this planet.
Well, what about that,
yes,
Jason?
Yes, it does. Yes, it absolutely does. Now, there's a huge debate, and most of it's underground and not talked about. There are certain scientific sectors, and I believe several major astronomers, that do believe that the Earth is shifting on its axis. And if it's shifting on its axis, it's going to give us a different inclination of the sun, and all of the normal time frames and seasonal frames will be slightly off. He's absolutely correct. This is about the 150th time I've heard this in the last 60 days. They've noticed the difference.
I've noticed.
My friend in Los Angeles lives in Koreatown, and he can go up on top of his third story building. And he says that the sun is setting in a different place ever so slightly, and so the moon is rising in an ever so different place, and the sun is coming, and the moon is appearing in a little different way than it usually does. It's very slow. No one's talking about it. If you want to check it out, ladies and gentlemen, just go to your favorite, either sunrise point, you know, or sunset point that you believe it's been setting at, and watch. You will be surprised.
Now, Rand, another question is, does this have a lot of iron oxide to it in this planet? Because I notice the sunrises and the sunsets are gold. I mean, so bright gold now.
Well, this is also in great conjecture. There are sources that are now saying that the gravitational field forces of this particular incoming body, whether it be just a smoldering, horrible asteroid of some type, or if it's in effect a legitimate medium-sized brown dwarf star. And by the way, we believe this star is at least as large as our moon. At its worst, it could be larger than the Earth. So its mass would be very great. And if this red oxide field, as is reported throughout history, is being pushed ahead of this planet, it could be the early effects, because we believe we're going to actually see it for the first time in the sky around September, October, November of 2009. We will see its first appearance.
Well,
by 2012.
Well, I'm noticing on my sidewalk an orange stuff on my sidewalk that I've never seen.
You said on your sidewalk?
Yeah, I'm actually, even in my bird bath, I'm actually seeing like oxidation in my bird bath and on my sidewalk. That's what's really...
Listen, sir, it would be very helpful. Could you gather some of that? Could you find a way that you could get just even a few scratchings with a razor blade so we could have it analyzed?
Now, who
that would be very interesting if you could do that.
Okay, now who would I have to send this to?
Send it to Kevin, and Kevin can send it on to me. Kevin, is that all right with you?
Sure. Absolutely.
I think this would be a good experiment. Let's get the public involved. We got to talk about Project Blue Light. Did you get that material I sent you?
Yes, I did.
What
I certainly
think of
did.
The graphics?
Tremendous.
X Files, here we come.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, thank you for the call. We have to move on. We have some other folks lined up, but thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
All right, the telephone number to call, ladies and gentlemen, is 1-623-581-5148. Once again, 1-623-581-5148. Dr. Rand, just go ahead with Project Blue Light for a moment.
Okay, well, first of all, would you mind if I gave out a quick 800 number for the book?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, if anyone is interested in ordering a book, Visa, MasterCard, Discovery, the whole nine yards, we can get it to you in about 5 to 6 days. Simply call this number, 1-800-247-6553. That's 800-247-6553. Or go to our website, which is www.returnofplanetx.com. And there's a hyphen between the T and the X, so it's www.returnofplanet-x.com, and there's full ordering availabilities there. Incidentally, if anyone would like to contact me, my email is real simple. It's Skipper, S-K-I-P-P-E-R, at att.net. Skipper at att.net. And if you want a personal copy, call my cell phone, 901-336-9660. Now, how many authors give out their cell phone numbers, Kevin?
Not very many.
Well, you know what? I love talking to people. I do answer my own email. I do answer my own phone calls, and I do write my own letters. And I think it's important that when you write a book like this, that the audience, your public, your critics, and your enemies alike know that you are very, very out in front. Otherwise, you can't get away with writing a book like this. Do you follow me?
Absolutely. I'll tell you, before we get into Project Blue Light, let's take this next call, and then we'll
sure.
do that. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Paul. I'm calling from New York City.
Hello, Paul.
How you doing? How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing fine, sir. Thanks for calling.
I definitely plan on purchasing your book. I'm a big believer in the Nibiru theory and the Planet X theory. And I've read all of Sitchin's books, and I do believe that it's made its elliptical orbit probably, according to Sitchin, about a million times, or could be more than a million times around the Earth. Not only do I believe that it's caused calamities here on Earth, but in my opinion, it could have also caused calamities on Mars. Because it passes through, I think, Mars and Jupiter, and could have caused the calamity there. And they just came out and said that there was at one time a some kind of impact on Mars that destroyed it, partially destroyed it. And I believe Planet X, excuse me, was probably the reason. I mean, if it can cause calamities here, why not on Mars?
You draw an excellent observation, and not only a good one and a great one, but you've also hit the exact reason for your statement. You are absolutely correct. This is not a new phenomenon. It's a natural disaster that comes back through the solar system on a regular basis. Each time it's different, because each time the dynamics of its celestial trek through the heavens can be affected by things that are outside of its influence, you follow me, like other gravitational forces coming from other bodies during its trek. The point is, you're absolutely correct, sir. By the way, expect New York City to have a major UFO event. And this event will bring great attention to the subject of our book, which is Planet X. So I'm going to put my foot out there, my tongue in front of my nose. I made a statement. I believe that New York City will see a major UFO event within the next 90 to 120 days. Hmm. This will signal the events that the ETs are going to start making themselves known. Now, if it's not New York, it's going to be another major city, but it's going to be on the East Coast.
Wow, amazing. One question I have for you. Now, some people say that the Anunnaki are like us, look like us, and some people say they're reptilian. Are the Anunnaki like us? Do they look like us? Or are they reptilian? And do they come here and feed on humans, like some speculate?
No, I don't. I don't go the insect or the lizard theory whatsoever. I believe the Anunnaki are humanoid beings, but they're much, much larger and more powerful than we humans. And I don't think they come here. They come here, I think they visit on a regular basis to check on what's going on, because I think that a large part of our ancestral antiquity comes from them in some way, shape, or form, and I do believe that they've been involved in genetic engineering through the ages. Now, if my wild horse theory is correct about Planet X, or Wormwood as I call it, having it enough power, gravitational force field, to pull Nibiru behind it, it would explain that Nibiru could get its power source from Wormwood, creating its life force sustaining system during its 3600 to 4000 year trek through the heavens, coming back through its elliptical orbit. So if I am right, and the Anunnaki are on their way close by, maybe those are the ships that we'll be seeing. I do believe in that theoretical approach.
Well, I've got a question.
It's mentioned in the Bible more than once.
Paul, I want to thank you for the call. I have a question that goes along with this. Now, you said that you think that within the next 90 to 120 days, New York City can expect to see a major UFO event. Why? Why do you think that?
Well, it's part of a program and an information source that I'm privy to because of my association of writing the book and the fact that I am involved in what we call extraterrestrial communication. So it's just part of the information stream that's coming to me, and don't forget, we wound up writing several books together. So I trust the information. He also verified my fear. Elon has verified my fear about this coming hurricane season. Now, it'll be one of two things. Well, okay, one of three things. It'll be a blowout year, and there'll be just several small ones, and everything will be fine, but then God help us the next year, or it'll be a regular season. I fear that it's going to be way beyond a regular season. Maybe not so many number of storms. By the way, they've been as high as 18 one hurricane season. I believe we may have fewer hurricanes, but I think they're going to be more severe, and they're going to be more powerful. Probably a total of 8 this year, at least 8 or 9. And I believe that between 4 and 6 of them may be Category 3s to 5s.
And you base this
on several years of research and last year's patterns.
Okay. And now that's on the hurricane predictions, but the UFO incident that you've predicted for New York.
They'll be talking. That UFO incident will bring attention to the entire subject across the field, which will then open up all of these topics for discussion, including my book.
Okay, now the source of your information for that is your communication with an extraterrestrial, is that correct?
Yes. Elon, I told this. This was the kid who then, when I was almost out dying on the lake, he's the one who saved me. He was paired with me back in school. We used to have these celestial sessions, these big schoolroom sessions. By the way, I'm not unique at all.
You're not the first person that has been on this show talking about these schools.
There are probably 100,000 of us right now walking around wearing pants and dresses, you know, whomever we are, we're all different. We all have a mission. I have my particular mission, which was expose Planet X for what it is and what it wasn't, and then warn about the approach of Wormwood and the extraterrestrial connection to it, which is what kind of you and I started talking about in our email, our early emails.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan in Washington.
Yes, Ryan.
I had a question, and I'll take the answer off the air. And the question is there anything in the pyramids the Great Pyramids that has some that relates to this, with as far as the alignment of the pyramids or any kind of artwork on that.
All right, thanks for the question. And what about that, Dr. Rand?
All right, the mystery in the construction of the pyramids isn't a great a mystery as everyone would like to believe. If you really understand how the who, what, when, where, and how of the pyramid building, you quickly realize that there was a much superior extraterrestrial influence and technology that helped build them. Just the aligning alone was, at that point, beyond the human capacity. So yes, there is direct involvement, and yes, there are inscriptions if you understand. There are several. Peter Tompkins wrote probably one of the most definitive books on the Great Pyramid, by the way. He's a very respected author. And I had a chance to know him and meet him, and he told me that the more he studied the Great Pyramid, the more he realized that it contained the secrets of the universe. Well, that's a pretty bold statement, isn't it?
It is.
He spent 29 years of his life. He's got one of the greatest books ever written, Secret of the Great Pyramid. But anyway, that's the answer that I would like to give to our caller from New York. Yes, the Great Pyramid is a historical.
He's from Washington.
The world in stone.
That was the caller from Washington.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry. The gentleman from Washington.
I stand
corrected.
Yeah, Ryan from Washington.
Right.
Look. You can tell from the not only the number of calls and the placement around the country of those calls, but you can tell from the content of the questions that this is something that's very, 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 it's very much on people's minds. A lot of people are frightened about the future because they've read these things. I talk to people who are evangelical and or fundamentalist Christians who they know all about wormwood, and this whole thing has them frightened. I talk to people who are not Christians or they're not religious, and they've read Sitchin, and they've read perhaps your book, they've read other writers, and so they know about this, they know it's coming. And it's frightening for them. Should they be frightened?
Am I frightened?
Should they be? Should we
should
be?
Should they be? Okay, let me address that question head on, okay? I say so in the book. I basically say that when faced with a difficult situation, which could even be life-threatening, the last thing that you want to do is become afraid. Because once you become afraid in spirit or in physical stamina, then you've already lost the battle to survive. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
We are our own reality engineering creation. We engineer and create every thought that we have, and then we usually react to our thoughts. See, we really need to understand what goes on with the human mind. So directly answer your question, a certain amount of fright would probably keep us on our edge to the point where it would hold our attention. But no, do not be overly frightened. The reason I wrote the book was to avoid fear and to prepare everyone. Now that sounds very ominous. It's gloom and doom. It's not gloom and doom. It's reality. Kevin, it's happening right around us as we speak right now. The wildfires in California are burning hundreds of thousands of acres, and they can't even fight the fires. That's the reality.
All right, let's go back to the telephone line.
Control.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Okay, Debbie from Columbus. You're going to have to speak up. We can barely hear you, and we've only got a couple of minutes here.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I agree with Dr. Rand 100%. Those of us that are out here that are paying attention to what's going on, as folks would probably call us New Agers, we know that these things are coming about. I can feel it in the air. I can feel it when the rain falls. I can feel it in the wind. There's just a lot of things going on, and Planet X probably explains a lot of what is going on right now, and the incident with 2012 and everything. And we do need to be informed of this. I mean, those of us that are aware of it, we're already aware of it, and we're trying to prepare for it, but the whole world needs to be informed. And unfortunately, our government, not only our government, but the governments around the world of the supposed civilized countries don't want people going because they're afraid that there's going to be one large wave of mass panic. And they don't want to have to deal with that. So I'm
really not sure they could deal with it.
I don't think they could, but I think it's great that Dr. Rand's doing what he's doing and trying to inform folks about this really important, not only issue, but issues that are coming up.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Thank you for your call, and I must tell you, you have given one of the most perceptive presentations on reality as we speak. Is this still the first? Are we on the second yet, Kevin? I think I've lost it. Are we in the second or the first of July? Second.
You mean the second half of July?
No, today. Today is July 2nd, yes.
Actually, today is July 1st.
July, okay, the 1st, all right. As we speak right now, July 1st, every single thing that your caller just related is not only absolutely true, but it's happening as we speak right now.
All right, and right now we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. More with Dr. Jason Rand and your telephone calls at 1-623-581-5148.
Yeah, yeah, 'cause it's a lie.
Welcome back. My guest this evening is Dr. Jason Rand, and we're talking about the contents of his book. It's called The Return of Planet X. Dr. Rand, one of the things that I have heard, and I've heard it on this show, I've had several guests that have mentioned this, I've had callers that have mentioned this, and that is that it has been said that we have 12 strands of DNA, and that as the solar system begins to move up through the galactic medium, and some people say as Planet X approaches, it will activate these 12 strands. Now, do you have any, did your research touch on any of that?
No, that is one area that we were not, we just didn't have the time to approach a subject as complex as that. In other words, that whole study, which I believe is still ongoing, if I'm not mistaken, was too bold to approach. No, we don't have any information on that. However, I will say that the premise of what they're saying certainly makes sense. It could speed up the process as they've described it, and that these additional factors will become viable. I don't know. I'm not endorsing it or denouncing it. I just don't know enough about it, but I believe that it's certainly possible.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, good evening. It's Charles in Albuquerque.
Yes, Charles.
I'm thinking you're having a very interesting show tonight.
Well, thank you.
And I had a couple of questions, if you might.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your guest mentioned that Planet X was going to be difficult to spot, I think, because perhaps it was approaching from the sun, and we couldn't see it through the glare. Am I right there?
Yes, you're absolutely correct, sir. It's been emerging now for a number of years, but because of its luminosity content, and because it takes very special infrared types of telescopes to detect it, it's very hard to spot. But it'll be soon emerging from behind that peripheral area of the sun's glare where are the telescopes, and that's why, again, we believe that the South Pole Telescope was constructed almost solely for this purpose of viewing this incoming object at close range.
So it's coming from the sun, or is it coming from the South Polar area?
No, it's coming from behind the sun in the southern expanse of what we look up and what we see from the planet. It's coming up from the south. It's going to cross up and under the plane of the ecliptic of our solar system. It's a little complicated. We cover all of this, sir, in the book. Probably I've got 3 or 4 pages devoted to it. And once it emerges from the glare of the sun and it becomes visible, and it will become visible, we believe, then there will have to be major announcements of its reality, because when you have a billion people on the planet seeing the same thing, even with imperfect telescopes, then obviously where there's smoke, there's fire. In this case, it could be a brown dwarf star.
Well, I'm kind of confused, because if you're looking at something toward the sun and the sun is glaring, wouldn't 6 months later, if you're on the other side of the sun, you're looking at the opposite direction, you'd have a perfectly clear view of it, wouldn't you?
I don't think that celestial mechanics work that way, but that's an interesting theory. I'd like to get that one done. I'd like you to send me an email on that question. I'd love for you to do that, and I'll get it answered for you.
I had another question about being a contactee.
Yes, sir.
You must be aware that there are a lot of other people that have been contactees. And
absolutely, sir. I'm the first to tell you that when I was a child in that classroom, there were thousands and thousands of children that I remember seeing gathered, so to speak. And I said earlier in our interview tonight that I do not believe that I am that unique. I'm only one.
Do you know of any other people who have had contact with the same race, same people that you have?
Yes, in fact,
my mentor. Do you know who Dr. J.J. Hurtak is?
No, I wasn't.
The director and founder of the Academy for Future Sciences?
Uh-huh.
Well, he's a very, very noted world figure in the area of extraterrestrial communications. And he, too, was a child in the same type of school that I was. Uh-huh. And we have been lifelong friends and associates now since 1978. So, yes, I am in contact with other people like myself, in some cases from the same classroom.
Stories you've heard from other contactees.
Yes, okay, you two guys are talking all over each other, so Charles, go ahead.
I'm sorry, stories that you may have heard from other contactees, that the books they've written and so forth, ring any bells with you and say, oh, that guy must be have gone to the same bunch that I have.
Not so much from a story told by someone, it's that I personally experience. I've met dozens of people now. I've been in this UFO field now practically all my life. You know, ever since an event like that at age 11, you suddenly realize that the course of your life is not like any normal child. So I'm used to it. I've been around hundreds and hundreds of other contactees at UFO conferences. I was very fortunate in that I was one of four representatives chosen by the Ufological Society of the United States to participate in the first World Congress, which took place in Tucson, Arizona in 1991. There were UFO associates and investigators from over 60 countries that showed up there.
Wow.
And during that time, I got to meet many of foreign contactees who were at the same convention, experiences very much like my own. Now, there are hundreds of us, thousands of us out there working and doing what we're doing. And yes, we're in contact with each other. At least I am with those that I know are on the same playing field as I am.
And you think they're in contact with the same bunch of aliens?
Try that one again. I lost part of it.
And you think they're all in contact with the same bunch of extraterrestrials as you are?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that they have to be the, quote, same bunch as mine. Understand that it is widely believed that there are at least 87 extraterrestrial cultures, mostly humanoid, that have been in contact with this planet over the years. 87 different ones. Mine, they call themselves the fourth racers, are from a planet called... It's in the Arcturus star system. It's Epsilon, the fifth planet in the Epsilon system. So I have met two other people that are in contact with the fourth racers. We've had interesting discussions, and we all realize that we're from the same school. So yes, it is a very realistic thing that we're going through. There are thousands of us at work. Some of us are writers. Some of us are on radio and television. For instance, did you know that Gene Roddenberry was a childhood contactee?
No.
I'll bet not many people know that.
I did not.
And the reason I know that was that I had an unbelievable opportunity to be friends with him from 1978 until he died, which was not so long ago.
If you think about it certainly makes sense.
I'm sorry?
If you think about it certainly makes sense.
Well, he said so, sir, in public. He stated that you know, although most people wouldn't believe him, that all of the stuff that he created in Star Trek was basically given to him by the ETs, and he simply put it in a very commercial aspect and created the Starship Enterprise and the characters and the stories. But he said it was all based on what he was shown and what he was told. He was actually told to start the series Star Trek. And by the way, most people don't realize that it was a terrible struggle to get that show on television. And then it was only up there for like 5 years.
Yeah, and it's still there.
But it's lived forever.
Yeah, and probably will. Charles, I want to thank you for the call.
There's a new picture coming out. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sir, did we answer your question?
He's gone. I cleared the line for the
you
next
think
call.
We did? I think we did.
I think so. I cleared the line for the next call, and then just as I was about to bring them on, they gave up.
Okay, so, well, we got Project Blue Light to talk about.
Yeah, and we're going to have to get on that because we will run out of time. So let's do it right now.
Okay, I'm sure everyone's familiar with the old Project Blue Book days, starting in 1947 with the Roswell crash, when that whole program was started by the Air Force. Basically, it was supposed to be an investigative tool. In fact, what it was an information gathering device that gathered pictures and videos and film and everything it could get its hands on, and terribly distorted it and didn't do a good job. Well, that project was killed not so long ago, and Project Blue Light is our concept for recreating the mission, the scope, the reality, and the evidence. We want to start a brand new Project Blue Book, but we want to call it Project Blue Light. And this time it'll be run by civilians, not the military. And we're inviting every one of you out there who are interested in joining the project. I will personally send you the information that Kevin has. May I give them my email real quick?
Absolutely.
All right. My email is skipper, S-K-I-P-P-E-R, at att.net. Just drop me a note. Dr. Jason Rand, I'm interested in Project Blue Light. Send me some information. We'll get you enrolled. We're going to get a website up and running. I'd like to start collecting information. And, Kevin, I'd like to invite you to be a chairman on our board of directors for it. Would you accept, sir?
Wow. Let me think about that through this break.
Well, don't think too hard now.
I won't, but I have to think about it, and I'll give you my answer right after the break.
All right, folks, we'll be back right after this break. Don't go away.
Thank you.
right, we are back. My guest this evening is Dr. Jason Rand. The book we've been talking about is called The Return of Planet X. And Jason, if you will, tell us again where we can get the book.
Sure. If you'd like to order a book, you can call this direct 800 number, 1-800-247-6553. Operators are standing by. It sounds like, you know, Rush Limbaugh here. So it's 1-800-247-6553. Or if you'd like an autographed copy, just email me at Skipper, S-K-I-P-P-E-R, at att.net, and I'll arrange with you to send you a signed autographed copy, and I'll date it and put a really nice bookmark in it for you. How's that?
Sounds great. All right, I want to go back to Project
Website.
Blue. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Project Blue Light, we're gonna get that moved over to our website as soon as possible. The website that we're developing and is working up right now is www.returnofplanet-x.com. There's a hyphen between the T and the X. It'll give you all the information on the book and all of the activities that are going on, some great graphics, samples from the book, inside front and back covers. You can see the entire book at a glance on the Internet. And it would only take about a week to get it. It would go through normal shipping channels for you. And it's exciting. 342 pages. You pick it up. You don't put it down until you're done. And after you're done reading it, I strongly encourage and pray that you pass it on to your wife, your kids, your children, your uncle, your aunt, your brother, whatever. It's a book that the entire family should understand because it's all about the future. Do you know what Kreskin said about me? You know Kreskin? Oh, I love Kreskin.
Oh, yeah, the amazing Kreskin.
I met him once, by the way.
Did you?
Quite an interesting man. Anyway, Kreskin said that the reason that the human race is so in awe of the future is because that's where they will spend the rest of their lives, and they're dying to find out what's coming around the corner. Well, in this case, we believe it's a great big bad burned out star called Wormwood, and I think we're about to experience the return of what's known in the media as Planet X. Don't forget, Planet X was coined by NASA itself now. I didn't originate it. It's not mine. It's NASA's. They started this whole thing. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
Had they not put out that bulletin, that news press release, there wouldn't have been any basis for the entire planet to be discussing Planet X at this time, as I'm saying, on July 1st, 2008, talking with you on the radio to your global audience. It's all happening. Just as we're talking.
Let me go back to the Project Blue Light for just a moment.
Okay.
What is the goal of Blue Light?
Well, probably, in the easiest terms, is to expose the truth. The truth has never been told. Remember the X-Files thing? The truth is out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The truth is out there. It's all around us. It's inconceivable to me how the governments of at least five conservative religious countries have been hiding all this information from their public for all this time. You realize that there's only five countries in the world that don't openly accept the reality and the evidence and discussion of UFOs and ETs? Don't you find that a little strange? And, of course, the United States is one of them. But guess what, folks? Everybody in the United States knows about UFOs and ETs. It's all over radio and television and magazines.
Oh, yeah, the public has outrun all the cover stories. Let's go back to the phone line one more time,
sure.
Very quickly. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Okay, Mark, you'll have to make it quick because we're almost out of time.
One quick question. Dr. Rand, are we going to have a pole shift, or is it going to be something less that we can prepare for? And I'll listen off.
Okay.
On it.
Thank you, sir. Great question. The good news is, I doubt personally that it would be a full pole shift. However, the odds are that even a partial slippage of the planet on either its axis of rotation or its land masses sliding across or into each other because of the sudden movement or the stoppage of the planet's rotation aside from that, I think that we're going to be in for a very severe period of another 2.5 years of deadly storms, natural disasters, miraculous, terrible things that could be coming out of the sky. But what we have to realize is it could be on a scale of 1 to 10. It could be an 8. It could be a 5. It could be a 2. It's unpredictable. But if any sign of what's happening right now is an indication of what could be coming our way, I think that the consensus is that we're in for a very rough next 3.5 years. And by the way, I do connect it to the thing that the Christians call the rapture, which probably is another show, Kevin.
Well, I don't know. And I'll tell you, that gets into doctrine. I don't mind discussing the things that are in the Bible, but the rapture is pretty much an evangelical doctrine.
Yes, the word never appears in the Holy Bible. The word never appears, but it is understood by almost every Christian practicing person that there is such a thing that they believe is going to be the rapture. Now, I'll tell you this. My sources through Elon tell me that there is definitely going to be a format of a rapture, but it will be by benevolent beings in very large ships, the wedge-shaped ships that we've seen and talked about.
Well, you know, the word that is used, I believe the Greek word that is used, that they refer to as parousia, which is a sudden catching away.
Yeah.
And they refer to it, you know, in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. And
that is described in the Bible.
Yeah. And so the word rapture doesn't appear. However, that is simply a shorthand English term to discuss this moment, twinkling of an eye, catching away.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things that I say that I get pummeled for in the email is that if you believe that the Bible is true and you believe that the God who exists is the God that is presented in the Bible, then you cannot fail to believe in extraterrestrials because that God is extraterrestrial.
You could say that.
Well, you know, he's not from here.
No, yes.
So
I truly believe that the Lord, the good Lord Jesus, the Christian icon that he is, I believe that he certainly had extraterrestrial roots. I would say so.
Well, look, the God that's spoken of in Genesis is not from here. He can't be if he created here. So if that's the true God and he created here, he's extraterrestrial. And if that's the father of Jesus, then you have an ET human hybrid, and that really, my inbox will now flame for 3 days. But I, you know,
did we set the field afire?
Well, I've done it many times, and I'm accustomed to it. Jason, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being with us, and if you will, give us your website again.
Sure, the website is www.returnofplanet-x.com. So there's a hyphen between the T and the X. And email me. I'd be happy to talk to you. My cell phone number is 901-336-9660. I answer the phone, and it will be me saying hello. Kevin, thank you so much for this opportunity. I had such a great time. I really did, and the time just went, whoosh, it's gone.
It goes in a hurry.
By the way, time on Earth is speeding up. You do know that.
Yes, it is.
All right, that's another thing we need to talk about.
Well, I want you to come back and be with us again, and if you will, just stay on the phone with me for a moment as I close the show, because I want to talk with you. And by the way, yes, I will accept to be on the board of directors. Okay, folks, Dr. Jason Rand, and you know, you've heard me say it so many times, if you miss a single second of a Kevin Smith show, you're going to miss a universe of information.
Tomorrow night, my guest will be Robert Felix, and we're going to talk some more about this global warming thing and what's really up with that. His book, Not by Fire, But by Ice. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.